Today is Tuesday, September 29th, 2015. It's 9 a.m. We're at the City Council Conference Room at the City Offices for a regularly scheduled City Council workshop. Would you please rise and join me in a Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Roll call, please.
Mayor Betts?
Here.
Vice Mayor McGuire?
Here.
Councilmember DiLorenzo?
Here.
Councilmember Novio?
Here.
Councilmember Shipley?
Here.
Mr. Mayor, all members are present.
Thank you. Before we proceed, just an announcement. As most everybody knows, there will be a special City Council meeting immediately after this meeting. It has been properly noticed as being here at the City offices. However, on the City website, it is announced as being at the Community Center, where we normally have our City Council meetings. We have corrected the website, and we've asked staff at the Community Center to redirect anyone to this location from that location if they show up for the meeting. So that should help us out. First item on our agenda, resolution approving additional expenses related to the PA1 replacement project. Who gets to
morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
House
morning.
Members.
Yeah,
good morning.
Mike.
Hope everybody has a good day today.
So far.
Speaking of good days, approximately April 8th of last year, this year, just familiarize yourself with the location. This is PA1. It's the road control structure right across the street from the Mother Seaman Church at the intersection of Pine Lakes Parkway and Deltair Parkway. On April 8th of this year, we received a phone call at the office saying that we have a bit of a leak. I said, How can the weir be leak? So Don and I went down there, and indeed it was leaking. In fact, it was picking up speed rather rapidly. If you observe this pile of dirt right here, our first reaction was to start shoving dirt down there to see if we could seal the hole. While Don was probing the concrete downstream, we discovered it was all hollow. And we started formulating plans in our head for how we were going to fix it. And about that point, the rear gate started leaning over and actually fell over, pulling away from the weir. And at that point, we had an uncontrolled catastrophe. And the canal upstream rapidly dewatered itself. Pipes sagged, and the whole thing just came apart. At that point, we notified Mr. Landon, started formulating our plans and how we're going to put together back together again. We brought the construction, we went to design, put it out for bid in less than a week. We had a qualified bidder respond within a month. We brought the City Council on, the 12th of May. City Council, you heard it at workshop on the 12th of May. On the 19th of May, you approved the contract with the client construction company, and we got started on the 20th of May, tearing this thing apart. Now, we encountered several difficulties within the first week. We decided that we're going to have to change the design. So we notified client that they're going to have to move the weir upstream out of the debris field, because just looking at this mess here, there's no way we're going to drive vinyl sheet piles through all that concrete. So we moved it upstream. We also as we disassembled this, we found it was not only one weir, there's another weir underneath it, and possibly another weir. So the site conditions itself, the soils are very contaminated with debris and stuff like that. Now, if you have material that's a similar size, it's easy to compact. If you have a lot of concrete and everything mixed in with the soils, you have almost a recipe for disaster. In any good construction project, you have to start on a good foundation. So at this point, we started removing the debris. It was way more than anybody had expected. We found huge chunks of concrete, old repairs. It was just probably the worst site I've ever seen. And because we had to remove all this debris, the soil was now unconsolidated, so we had to consolidate it with adding gravel into it and trying to make it some kind of firm mass that would hold the construction of the tank. Now, this was not done just on our own. In fact, we had some rather heated discussion with the contractor. I had some ideas. He had some ideas. We could meet in the middle. I told him, okay, in order to do this project, we have to go back to the engineer, the guy who designed the sheet piles for us, and get his opinion on what needs to be done. So he ran some calculations. Some of those calculations said that we had to have longer sheet piles, which I wasn't too thrilled about because we were running into a lot of debris, and we're almost at the maximum length for driving these sheet piles. They're 22 feet. We drove all these sheet piles down to sea level. The previous construction, the sheet piles only went down about 9 feet, went down to elevation 9. These sheet piles go down to elevation 0. We also made a recommendation that we dewater the upstream side of the weir, kind of like the way the beach waves compact sand on the beach. You know, the water comes in, and it goes away, and the sand dries out and compacts it. So for 2 weeks, we ran this dewatering equipment on the upstream side of the weir. First, we'd draw the water down to below where the sheet piles were, and then we'd fill it back up with water and draw it back down again, pumping all the water out. This is all based on the engineer's recommendation. He also recommended that we use additional riprap downstream, so we use twice the quantity of riprap to support the downstream side of the weir. And of course, with all this debris, it all had to be removed. A lot of it couldn't be sorted on site, so we couldn't use it on site, so it had to be hauled off and disposed of. Now, some of the enhanced benefits of this weir that we put in. There's one thing, it has a double wall redundancy. There's a wall upstream and downstream with 14 feet of compacted earth in between both walls. The structure is twice as deep as the old weir. It's 4 times thicker. We extended the wing walls above the high water level all the way to the tops of the bank so that there's no way the water can get around this weir. Riprap downstream serves as an early indicator of problems. Whatever we refer to as that, is unlike fabriform, where you don't know there's a problem until it starts collapsing. If there's a problem, the riprap starts sinking. All you need to go back up there and add more riprap. Structure is built stronger with pipe and gator support on both sides of 2 feet of concrete. We have remote control of the gate now. We also have added the 24/7 monitoring of upstream water levels, and we installed a rain gauge to monitor rainfall events in the central area of the city. Now, comparing that to the construction that we did in 2006, PA1 was rehabilitated in 2006 with a contract price of $487,000, final change order of $72,000, for a final price of $560,000 or so. Now, these are only the construction costs for this project.
Mike, what does that mean? Is that just labor and material?
Labor and material, yes, sir.
Okay.
And this doesn't count engineering costs or design costs for this project, which could easily have exceeded $150,000 to $200,000 addition. Now, this weir lasted about as long as it took for the ink to dry on the chip. It had to be repaired. The eastern half of this weir, you can see up here where it's been repaired. On this other side here, this whole side washed out. It had to be repaired. And fortunately, it was repaired at no cost to us, but it also left a lot of debris in the way. And I think one of the primary reasons this weir failed is site contamination from old construction projects, old repairs, and stuff like that. Now, this is the side that failed this time. Why they didn't replace the whole thing at that time, I don't know. But typically, Don and I, we do rehabilitation of these weirs. We go through and we cut out the center, put in the weir, and we carry on. PA1 went from rehabilitation to a replacement project in less than 7 days. At one point, we realized that we had to clean everything up, start from scratch, before we could proceed with any kind of a structure that would last any length of time. PA 1 replacement project, this is the final one of the photographs of it. Contract price is $373,000. We had a 10% contingency of $37,000. Final payment, which is due, is $104,000, with a final price of $514,000 or $515,000. Need to point out, this is the final cost of this project. This was designed in-house, managed in-house, and went from concept on April 8th to substantially completed the first part of August, which is a record in my book. That's less than 60 days construction time. Original budget for this project is $410,657. Per city council policy, a disaster reserve fund may be applied towards infrastructure failures. And I think the failure of PA 1 on April 8th qualifies. Therefore, we recommend that the remaining balance of this project be paid for from the disaster reserve fund. If there are any savings in the fiscal year 2016 stormwater budget, the disaster reserve fund will be replenished with those funds. And this is the final product. This is after a recent rainstorm. I do have to point out that everybody was very apprehensive for this project because we were starting it at the beginning of hurricane season. And we were fortunate that we didn't have any more weather than we already had to get this job done. Final required action by City Council is to approve the additional funding amount of $104,342.44. Any additional questions?
A couple. The design was done in-house.
Yes, sir.
This is no denigration of our staff, but is this the kind of project that we're qualified to design?
Yes,
You had the PA-1 in 2006 designed by a professional engineering firm, and they apparently did not do a really good design job.
I could put it to you this way. Since 2006, we have designed 9 of these since then, and none of them have failed.
Mike, didn't you call in a forensic engineer or some kind of an engineering consultant on this?
Yes, sir, we did.
Who paid for that?
We paid for it out of these funds here.
Okay.
What were the results?
Results were similar to what I said. It was bad site conditions.
In describing the initial attack, you said Klein moved upstream to put the sheet pile in. Could not the entire weir have been moved to an upstream location and thereby not having all of these site contamination problems?
Well, by moving it 50 feet upstream, we thought we were moving into undisturbed soils. That it was far enough upstream to be away from any contamination. Mm-hmm. If we'd have moved it any further upstream, it probably would have required additional permitting, which we'd still be building.
What was the bid of the second bidder to Klein? How much did they bid?
We didn't have a second bidder.
Okay, so we didn't have a competitive bid to look at.
No, sir.
It was put out for a competitive bid, but we only received one.
Okay.
Did we use the same engineer both times?
No.
Same
no.
engineer?
It was a separate engineering firm that designed the original PA one. When we designed these, we hire a structural engineer, and actually it's the structural engineer for the vinyl sheet pile company, to make the determination of how long the size is.
He tells us the thickness of the sheet pile, how long they need to be.
So because we ended up going with a different length on everything and making it different, are they responsible for anything because the engineers told us to build it one way and it ended up being completely different?
For the original one? The original one was built to design. Construction was maybe questionable, but it was pretty much built to design. When we do it, this one that we just built and the other 10 we've done, we go straight to what the structural engineer says. He says 24 feet.
He's also the manufacturer of the sheet pile.
So he knows. So this one's built to our design. with the sheet piles at the right spec and the right depth that the structural engineer determined with that particular site. Each site is determined.
Councilmember, without looking at the exact document in the city and the manufacturer of the sheet pile, one would anticipate that there was a failure of the sheet pile in the manufacturing quality of the sheet pile, or there was a failure because of the quantification, the determination of the length of the sheet pile. That decision was the proximate cause of the failure, then it would be responsibility upon independent responsibility upon the manufacturer of the sheet pile. But it's my understanding is that other than those two factors, the design for this as well as the other 9 or 10 other is done in-house. So there would not be a third independent third party to whom to look to for sharing of costs if there was a failure.
You commented that the riprap on the downstream side is kind of a monitor, that if the riprap starts to settle, putting more riprap in place doesn't solve the problem. If it's undermining from a failure of the weir, and that's what's causing the riprap to settle, putting more riprap doesn't solve the problem, does it?
Well, these sheet piles are driven down to elevation zero. So you have to go down 14, 15 feet before it causes any problems. And typically what happens is that riprap, it doesn't move, it just sinks. And you just keep adding riprap on top of it. And all that does is make it structurally stronger.
But actually, hold back to weight. Just to clarify a little bit. When these are just the fabric form, you have a solid concrete floor, there could be a void under this, which is what we had, and you don't know anything happens until it just collapses.
Hey, you look down there, it looks fine.
Looks fine. And but if we see one side of the settling, besides filling it in, we actually know there might be something going on. It gives us the opportunity to look into why it's settling. Is it just the ground settling, or is there an issue down there?
When we first started on this project and Klein was tearing out the old one, we found all kinds of poor workmanship in the one that collapsed. The sheet pilings were different lengths. The deeper you got, the shoddier it looked. Here's my question and my problem. Klein has done any number of weirs for us and done a wonderful job. So in terms of what we need for our stormwater, he is our resident expert, the company that is. So if I am a contractor and I come out and you show me what you got and what you want, and I probably bring in some staff and I look at it and I tell you this is what I think I can do it for. So the city makes a contract. I sign the contract, you sign the contract, that's the price. Now, during the time that this project was ongoing and problems were surfacing that were unforeseen, like they do on many projects that we do for stormwater, at no time did anybody come before the council and say, you know what, we got to renegotiate this contract because this is a lot worse than we thought it was going to be. Also, if I'm a contractor, and I signed a contract to do it at this price, if I come back at the end of the project when it's all done and say, gee, guys, I need more money because this didn't work out as well as I thought, it places the city council in a difficult position. Because even if he's right, and he did his best, but golly, it just turned out to be a terrible thing from start to finish, he signed a contract. He agreed to do it for that price. So I was out on that project almost on a daily basis, as were you guys. We saw the problems in that. But at no time did anybody from Klein ever come up to me or maybe you and say, you know what, this thing is a dozen times worse than what we saw when we agreed to this. We need to renegotiate the contract. Now the job is done. The thing is over, and now I need more money.
Sure. And I understand and I get what you're saying, that nobody came to city council. We were working fast.
And we appreciate that.
As things were going, this wasn't just go ahead and do it. Mike and I had constant conversations with Mike about what things would cost, and very much the cost benefit. There was a whole slew of other ideas that were thrown out there that we, Mike and I, just no, we're not going to do that. Once we got to the engineer's recommendation to do what we had to do as far as the dewatering, the extra lengths of sheets. Extra lengths of sheets are easy. It's a materials cost. 22 foot costs this much.
I remember that.
Right. Dewatering, we talked about costs and what.
Look, I mean, here's a cut to the chase here, Don. Everything you say I saw, mm-hmm. and I know that it's true. But if I've got a contractor that I'm dealing with on a regular basis that says, okay, I'm going to bid this project at this amount of money and probably get the job because I know that if I take a beating, I can always come back and get more.
I understand that logic, but working with client, that my personal opinion is that's not their mentality. We've done a lot of these weirs that haven't had to come back to council, and we run into problems all the time. We negotiate some of them out. Some of them are just done as a matter of course, and we generally stay within the contingency, which is why we have it.
And Don, you know Klein, I know Klein. I'm not saying anything about Klein, but how do I go back to the citizens in my district and tell them, you know what, this contractor couldn't do it for the price he quoted, and now I need more money?
Well, the question that I have, the original design called for sheet piles of a certain length. You extended that. Those were design changes after the contract was bid. Is that a fair statement? So they're change orders, in essence.
We
I understand that we were under the gun. This is one that you had to get done. There were all kinds of ramifications, golf course and its lack of watering capability and so on and so on and so on. For a number of reasons, this project had to move along. The good news is that we've got a disaster reserve fund that we can use. I've been a proponent of that for many years. The bad news is that we're going to use it, and I'm not at all confident that there's going to be savings in the stormwater budget to replenish it. So the onus is going to be on this council to replenish that in some way, somehow. I think it's essential that we do make that replacement. And I'm not willing to say, well, let's hope that there's going to be some stormwater savings tonight. There probably won't be.
If you had not been under the gun from a timing standpoint, would you have handled this differently?
We probably would have investigated other locations, possibly moving it upstream at some other point.
But that wouldn't save you any money by doing that.
No, it's saving
money. It cost you more.
Might run into right-of-way issues.
Oh, yeah.
Might run into permitting issues. There's a whole slew of...
Well, as I recall...
And you'd still have to remove the old weir.
Yeah, and we couldn't find the bottom. We didn't. We went down and thought it was here, and then we had
well,
to go
you see, the thing is, that's the point of this kind of construction. I mean, you look at it there, and you say, okay, give me a price for doing that. What do you see? You see water and soil. We were 20 feet below that, digging out old concrete.
I understand,
so there's
Mike,
no way of telling what you get involved in.
But that's the nature of the construction business. You don't never know in a finite term what you're going to get involved in. You take your years of expertise and what you do know, and you project from there, which is why we put a contingency fund in place.
And generally, these things that come up get covered under that contingency. They're never that exorbitant.
Is there, in the contract, are there limits? So, for instance, when Klein signed the contract, was there, you know, we'll remove this much debris? And then over that.
Oh yes, we. Yeah.
So that's where the change. I mean, it's normal. That's what I'm saying. That, you know, we have written thousands of contracts, and you sit there and you say, well, yes, I don't know what's going to happen, so I'm going to give you this much at this price. And then,
sure.
So are we there with that?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Okay. So he did what he said he was going to do at that price.
Right.
Or at the agreed price.
Right.
Who made the decision that, okay, this extra $104,000, we're going to do it, go, and then we'll go to the city council and get it approved? And I'm not looking for anyone. I'm saying you discussed this.
Yes.
But whose ultimate decision? Was that the city manager?
No, it was handled pretty much with my hand.
Okay.
You know, one way of doing these projects is a so-called design build.
Yes.
And if you do a design build project, you did the design, you did the construction, you're stuck with the consequences. This is something that we designed. So, while I'm uncomfortable that we had this big an overage, I don't think that Klein is inherently responsible. We, maybe with our crystal ball, if we just shine it up a little better, based on the fact that this thing has failed a number of times, we might have anticipated more problems than were there, but it's easy to think about it after the fact.
Exactly. And then when we do this, this actually turned a bad project, because if we would have just fixed on top of that and we were able to, eventually that would have just, you know, I mean, so you know, do we have any other wares out there like this that are repairs on repairs? Not like this. I mean, like the one
we actually a couple of years ago did the one behind the Apple. And when we were there, we ran into similar.
Yeah.
4 to 6 feet below the mud line, we were running into a debris field. It took us
Mulberry.
Mulberry Creek.
And who did that?
My construction was doing it. But we literally pulled a piece of concrete out of that hole, placed it 4 feet below the mud line. That was the size of a Volkswagen.
So
we
now moving forward, we'll know that that's possible and put it into the price.
It is possible. I'm sorry.
We have met many contractors bid on these projects before. Other contractors would have given you a similar price of $750 or $1 million to do this, just because they would anticipate everything, all
worst
the possible
case scenario.
Worst case scenarios. And that's why Klein always wins, because he bids on the best case scenario. Now, you ask about, say, spoiler removal, debris removal, stuff like that. We do say, okay, we estimate there's this much material that's going to have to be removed that you can't, it's not part of the weir. Because we ask them to do the stilling basin below the weir, too, because that has filled in over the years. And we said, this is how many, this is similar to what we do, Lehigh Island spoiler removal.
Mm-hmm.
This is how many cubic yards we think is there. Give us a price per yard for removal of everything above and beyond.
Right.
He removed this spoil.
And that's how you keep the price down.
Right.
Right.
He gave us a price up front, so it's $21 a cubic yard.
Right.
Great. So that you don't get down to it, and he says, oh, that's going to be $500 a cubic yard. What?
The fact that there was more cubic yards than...
anticipate 100 cubic yards, but you wind up with 500. There's where you're still the same price per yard.
Right.
And if we had not had to dig down 20 feet, and he had just gone down to the elevation, our number would have been
right.
But when you start digging through this debris field, and then you have to put the dirt back, we run into exponentially more...
Okay, so I'm going to state the obvious, and forgive me. Old Mulberry, we had a history. We knew, or we should have known, that there were multiple rebuilds of that. This one, we knew there were multiple rebuilds. As we move forward, I think we divide our weir projects into two groups. Those that have not failed and have been good for 30 years and now it's just old age. Those that have been a problem. I think we need.
And increase the contingency.
We don't have many left.
But those that fall into that second category, let's put a higher contingency in there.
And Mr. Mayor, we have three left.
Mm.
Small ones.
Okay.
Actually five, but no, six. We're going to change the design.
Number just doubled.
It keeps increasing.
Quit while you're ahead.
All right. I have a question about the disaster reserve funding. Chris is behind you. You need help. But where are we... with the council's fund balance policy, where are we with the disaster reserve and where will we be after this?
We're right now, dollar wise, about $2.2 million, so it would be $2.1 million, which would still be about twice the floor the council has set for disasters.
I mean, that disaster reserve fund to me is a tribute to the wisdom of previous councils, the fact that we were able to put that money aside just for this kind of thing. And I constantly am on the balance, how much is enough? You don't want to have $5 million sitting there just wasting away when you could be doing valuable things for the city. On the other hand, you don't want to be caught short. So my concern is, this is an unfortunate circumstance. We were operating under the gun. I don't think we had a whole lot of choices. I'm going to look to city council to replenish this money, not wait till the end of next year and say, well, maybe there is, maybe there aren't some savings. I think we need to, we'll find a way to do that. We'll find a way to do that.
Have a bake sale or something.
There you go.
That's bake sale.
if the schools only got everything they needed and the Air Force had to have a bake sale every time they wanted to buy a new bomber, why?
I don't think there's a problem with giving the money to Klein because he's a good contractor and we use him all the time. I just think at some point somebody should have said a phone call to the city manager, which then ended up to the city council saying, heads up, there's going to be more money spent. Just like we do with the contract we're going to talk about later on today. Now it was an emergency, so we need to get it in there right away.
I agree.
Yep.
Do.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Please let us know if this thing starts to leak.
Keep a very close eye on it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's a good point because when this weir failed, I had several discussions with Mike Brennan about it. And if the company that put it in was still in business, we could have sued him.
That's right. Oops.
It would have been a possibility.
Well, I mean, the
but whether or not the cost of the suit would exceed the cost that you regain, I guess.
It's a freebie, Mr.
Well, and just so the council knows, the public knows, I mean, city manager and I had threshold discussions about the possibility of seeking some compensation from either the original engineer or the original contractor. Based upon the information and facts that were available, it didn't make any practical sense because you had a contractor that just is not in existence anymore. And these types of litigation are extremely expensive because you have a lot of different parties involved. You have contractors, subcontractors, engineers, and they're always pointing fingers at each other. It's a massive discovery. And I'm not trying to say that some construction litigation doesn't make sense, but this is 2006. Long sorted history of this one, and the bottom line was when you have a defendant that is judgment proof.
Even if you get a judgment, that there's no way to collect it. Why? I mean, it's a moral victory.
But when you spend $500,000 of the citizens' money on this weir, and it fails year after next, we're just going to say, well, it's too hard to.
We have to break it down, Mr. Vice Mayor. Originally, it failed in 2006, 2007. And so the original problem was created there and then. And at that point in time, it's my understanding that the responsible parties came in, taxpayers did not spend any money, and repairs were made. Heard this morning that there was an issue of, was a correct decision made in 2007, 2008, as to just replace one half of the weir? At that point in time, arguably, would it have made more sense to go back and require the responsible parties to fix the entire weir? Well, I'm speculating now, but from what I've heard this morning, the problem may or may not have been with the original designer, the original construction. It may have been that the original decision to rebuild that weir in 2006 was a poor decision because it was built over the ruins of Rome. I mean, it sounds like you've got, you know, historical.
If you said, Mr. Contractor, that I can do this and it'll work and everything will be fine.
And absolutely, and that's why the contractor and the engineer in 2007 ponied up and paid for all of the expenses associated with that rebuild in 2007. Now, I'm going to defer to staff, but I'm not aware that there have been continual problems with that weir since the corrections that were made in 2006-2007. It basically was fixed from that point until 2015.
And
correct me if I'm wrong, but that's my understanding factually.
Mr. Wire, from what you're describing, you were on scene more than I, this failure was not really a failure of the repair that was done. This was an undermining of the whole mess.
I wouldn't.
Is that a,
the other side? No, I mean, because when the excavation got down to the point where you could see how the last weir was put in, even to a layman like myself, it was obvious that the that what they did was pretty shoddy.
Mr. Mayor, from what was described to me, and this has been several months now, what was described to me is that there certainly was an issue about the causation of the failure this time, 2015, whether related back to the original design and reconstruction, 2006-2007. Again, the problem is that, as you mentioned before, you can spend a lot of money, or if the defendants are judgment-proof, and you'll get a default judgment, you won't spend a lot of money, but it'll get you a piece of paper that says that a defendant that has no assets owes the city taxpayers of Palm Coast a lot of money, but there's just nothing to recover.
Well, I think we're all unhappy with the additional charges. I'm not sure there's a lot we could have done differently. Had this not been an emergency situation where we were draining out the whole west side of the city.
And Mr. Mayor, generally these are planned in a year in advance. We'll do the design. We have time to do the right discovery, testing, whatever we need to do. That's why the majority of the ones we've done have not had issues that have had to come back.
Okay. Maybe we've learned a lesson. Anything else on agenda item number one? Agenda item number two, resolution approving contract with Environmental Land Services for lime sludge transfer and stacking services. I understand lime sludge transfer. Stacking leaves me a little bit confused.
Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning.
Good morning. This is basically a routine maintenance procedure for handling lime sludge at water plant. We wind up with about 7,000 cubic yards of the stuff on an annual basis. And it goes into a lagoon. It's several hundred feet long, 13 feet deep, about 50 foot wide, full of lime sludge. And so it's pretty soupy stuff in that state. The water table's kind of high, so we have a machine come in, basically dig it out and place it in the drying bed, which is adjacent to it. That has a sand bottom, and it's bermed up, and that allows the material to dewater some. And so we let that kind of happen naturally, and then we come back in and stack it to kind of pile it up and further facilitate drying. The stuff's very difficult to haul when it has any amount of moisture in it. So
stacking is piling.
Okay. Yes, sir.
And then ultimately it's hauled away?
Ultimately it gets hauled away,
once it's dried out as much as possible.
You know, we bid this project. ELS was the low bidder, local outfit out of Pinnell. And they use it for making road base and paver base material. They mix it with concrete and other materials.
Will this amount of sludge increase or decrease when, as a result of the ZLD that we put in?
No,
they're
two separate things. This is just the sludge at Water Plant 1, and this is just stacking and handling of the material there. The ZLD does make sludge, but it's a similar process, but we have a different means of disposal there. We actually have a belt filter press, which helps dewater it.
And do we have a separate contract for that?
Yes, we do.
And it's not this person?
No, sir. Well, ELS does haul material away there, too. It's a separate...
But we're only considering Water Treatment Plant 1.
That's correct. In this.
Probably because it has to do with hauling and the distances and everything out, right? That's basically how these things are put together, the price is put together. Is that correct?
Pretty much per cubic yard.
Okay.
I recall this thing is almost an annual.
It is. Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's the joys of a lime treatment plant. Agenda item number three, resolution for a price agreement with Karma Use for lime, stone, and high calcium bulk quicklime. Oh, boy.
This is our treatment chemical that we use for softening at both water plant one and two in the ZLD process. And it's just our annual supply of quicklime.
And has this been our vendor? This is just a new...
We've used Carmus for a number of years, probably 15 or 20 years. There were four bidders, and they were cheapest by $27.
And we've been happy with their performance?
Very.
Wonderful success. Agenda item number four. Resolution approving the Affordable Housing Incentives Report for inclusion into the Local Housing Assistance Plan for the State Housing Initiative Partnership Act.
Good morning, Mayor, Council. This is just in 2009, we entered into an interlocal agreement with Flagler County to essentially manage our SHIP funding. We have the option of taking on our own funding, but it didn't make sense to duplicate in that situation. So Flagler County manages the funding program. The majority of homes they benefit are in Palm Coast. And this is just one of the required elements of maintaining the SHIP program is to do an affordable housing incentive report. It hasn't changed since the last time the City Council looked at it, but it's just part of the process.
We got a quick question, Bo. Mm-hmm. What defines, if you can, in a brief sense, what defines affordable housing in Palm Coast?
Should have the numbers with me, but generally,
just give me a
generally affordable housing definition is no more spending no more than a third of your income on your housing related expenses.
So it's based on average income, household
family size,
right? Family size and income level. and so for anyone, you know, ideally you wouldn't spend more than a third of your income on housing. So in Palm Coast.
That's all right.
Yeah, I can't. I don't want to pull the wrong numbers out. But
if you got $1 million income, a third of that buys you a really nice house.
Right, buys you really
but if you got $25,000 income, a third of that buys you a tent.
Exactly. So, and the SHIP program obviously benefits the lower and moderate income levels, the housing rehab. It's majority a housing rehab program. They do some purchase assistance. I'm not sure the state. You know, depending on where the housing market is, tends to vary what they use.
And the county manages that program for us, is that correct?
Right. The county manages that program. Like I said, the majority of the beneficiaries are in Palm Coast. It's the majority of the housing stocks here. So, yep, they manage it. We get the common reports, and we put it on our website, and, of course, refer people when they apply for housing. So, you know, whether it's CDBG or the SHIP program, typically, people stay on both lists until they get assistance.
Mm-hmm. Two things. In section I, Bo, we can make recommendations to this document for inclusion in the document. Let me start with that.
Sure.
It's going back to the LHAC, Affordable Housing Committee.
I think the Affordable Housing Committee already reviewed it.
Uh-huh. Page 32. I don't know if you have the same page.
I think I
do. Section I.
Okay.
The recommendation, I believe this is no change, right? Consider cost of housing. Okay. I'd like to change that to report cost of housing. So if we had an ordinance coming up and, you know, we have the staff report, in the staff report, it would document, report,
right,
what the change to the cost of housing would be for that change of ordinance.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I can, if we can't make the change now, it'll be here in another year or two, and then also we can just make that part of the standard update.
Okay. And then, more for council, in section E, there's a section that says, the allowance of affordable accessory residential units in residential zoning districts. So I actually had a citizen talk to me about this about 3 weeks ago. Had a phone call. They were looking to have they were asking about, a mother-in-law suite detached, what was allowed to be done, and I basically, went through, got the code out, kind of explained to them what they really couldn't do because we really don't allow it. And so it got me thinking about it. I haven't formulated a conclusion myself, but I really wanted to get some input from the rest of you, what you thought of, about it. So I'll try to explain it better. We currently do not allow detached residential units on single-family properties. So you can have the
detached home, living units.
Detached living units, that's right. So you can have a, if you had a courtyard home that had a separate building in the back, you could have that as detached from the home, but it couldn't have a kitchen or a bathroom. Might be able to have a bathroom. Definitely can't have a kitchen. Might be able to have a bathroom. So you could have, like, it's not really a guest room. It would be like a pool room or game room or something like that. So, you know, something that would be associated with the pool, but not a living space. And with kind of changes in how people are living, I was looking for a little bit of feedback. Okay, here we go.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Now, it does cause additional, you know, there's consequences that go along with it. Okay, you generally have more vehicles, you know, you'd have more, of course, you'd have more trash. I mean, you'd have other services, additional services than a residential house is using now. I don't know, anybody's thoughts on it?
Coming in.
You could have more, yeah.
There's an aesthetic component, possibly.
Yeah.
Well, you would have to limit the size, the lot. I mean, I couldn't see that on the standard.
80 by 100.
Yeah, I mean,
it would be like good also there, because this comes up occasionally in other jurisdictions as well. And the other concern would be enforcement, because I think the objective, arguably, is to create a separate unit which would be available for some sort of family use.
Right.
What you don't want to do is you don't want to create an open door where you have de facto duplexes.
Right.
This is single family zone.
Well, what happens when grandma passes away and now I've got this beautiful dwelling
and you want
to rent
it
out as a
yeah.
separate.
But it's problematic because from,
lock the door.
From a legal standpoint, it's very difficult to get into the business of defining what is family and what is not family. It creates all sorts of litigation
okay.
in today's world. So if you're saying, okay, we're going to allow this, but we're only going to allow it for family,
mm-hmm.
well, my definition of family is not necessarily the same as your definition of family, and a lot of jurisdictions face this when they have single-family residential areas that are close to universities and colleges and things like that,
mm-hmm.
and then you have people that buy homes, and then all of a sudden you've got six different people, or two brothers and two sisters that are living there, and then their friends, and again, it's doable.
Mr. Reichwood, I want to share with you a funny, funny story. A million years ago in New Jersey, in a community where I worked, they passed an ordinance saying that no domiciles, there should more than have six unrelated individuals. Everybody thought that was a great idea. The first complaint was made against the Sisters of Mercy Hospital because the nuns were living in a nunnery on the hospital property. Be careful what you wish for.
Well, what would happen if this did allow someone to live there? Does that affect your property taxes? Does an appraiser now take into consideration that you did have a 3,000 square foot home, but now you put this
sure.
thing on the backyard and people are living in it, so I'm adding another couple of hundred feet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could just.
And
you know,
how do they find that out?
Well, by building permit.
Building permit.
Yeah.
I put a storage shed in my backyard. I had to come down and pull a permit, and I had a contractor put it up.
Mm-hmm.
But no one's living in it. But if I was unscrupulous and chose to put my mother-in-law.
What a nice guy.
And she rested in the base.
Bob, you get to live in the shit.
Well, I'll tell you what, I put her down to Grand Oaks, so.
When I was campaigning, I came upon a house that had a side door, and I knocked on that door because no one answered the front door. And the guy was very worried because it was a garage that was turned into an actual house for his mother-in-law, and that I don't understand why we can't do something with. That you,
well,
they had a kitchen
I
and
don't
a bathroom.
Think we, I think we can. He just chose to do it around the system.
Yeah.
He didn't.
I
you
think,
know, right
I think you have to have at least a single-family
garage.
Garage.
Oh, okay. But the point, too, is still, I think he just did it and didn't
It's very possible.
Say anything, you know, because...
Then the concern about doing that without building permits is that there could be some electrical work that's been done.
Exactly. Well, it would have to be...
And then there's the emergency access issue.
That's right.
You've got a lot of building issues.
Life safety.
What are you asking for here, Jason?
I just wanted really a discussion about...
What I like it, but it would have the land size, the lot would have to be able to easily accommodate it. You know, we would have to look at it where there would be access to it. You know,
we have coverage ratios.
I guess they would share. Otherwise, we'd have to drop another meter. Electric.
That's not a big deal.
Yeah, I
don't know. It's something to think about, and maybe in the future we could have a more...
Well, this is not a burning issue, but perhaps if staff could give us some of the potential consequences or implications.
I just want to make sure it's clear what the intent of this is. It would be a rental unit, so staff wouldn't necessarily be able or empowered, or I think it would probably be against... for housing policy, that it would be a rental unit on the property. So the idea that, you know, grandma or family member stayed there, they could, but it wouldn't be restricted to that. So just so that's clarified.
The one thing too I would restrict is that both units can't be rented. So that the person who, you know, the person who lives at the home is there. So we don't have...
I
don't know if you can do that.
I understand the implication. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I don't know that we'd like going in checking family trees.
It's a question of enforcement.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of codes that you can, restrictions that you can craft, and word as carefully as you can. But then getting onto private property and
verifying.
And I've sat through a lot of code enforcement meetings where, you know, we spent a lot of time looking at phone bills and electric bills and neighbors' comments and testimony and all the other things that would be indicia of who lives there. And you can have staff, have a lot of staff spending a lot of time trying to enforce the unintended consequences of really good idea.
It's something we could look at in the next update of the report, is maybe on larger lot sizes, how that weigh positives and negatives of that.
No, I mean, but make sure we understand this from staff standpoint. There's one thing to deal with the regulations under SHIP and under that. What I heard Jason saying was that looking at our land development code in general, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Looking at our land development code in general, not just with the funds that are coming from the state federal government, but in general, looking at the restrictions on the uses of single-family lots in the city of Punk Coast.
Now, I haven't formulated a decision, like I said. It just made me think about it a little bit and say, family dynamics are changing. We realize that. How people live are changing. The age of our population is changing. And, you know, more and more times you have the older family member coming back to live in the house, but they would they'd still like their own space and something.
Another
to
thing
consider.
Too is maybe the allowance of an attached extension that couldn't normally be done under our current. You know what I'm saying? Where now that it's attached, we have a lesser potential of it becoming rented, and then when the family passes on or moves on, that area can then be used inside, you know, within the household. So we don't, you know, it's just a little, because that's the mother-daughter concept up north.
I hope we're not opening the short-term vacation rental issue.
Yeah, there you go.
it's something to think about. Yeah, it's something to think about. It's bigger than a conversation we can have here, I think. But I just was wanted to kind of get it out there for a thought.
Agenda item number 5, resolution approving purchase of budgeted white fleet for fiscal year 15-16.
Morning, Mayor and Council.
Morning, Mister.
Although this one and the other item is named special item or special agenda, no prices, no emergency, there is a sense of timing because what we're trying to do is save some bucks. We did this last year where we were budgeted for fleet for purchases, and not all that we need to purchase, what we'll be purchasing, is available, but there are trucks, 150s, 250s, some of them are available, and they offer them to us this time of the year if we get ahead of the 2015-16 contract, sheriff's contract. We're able to save a few dollars. Last year was considerable. This year it's $14,000, and that's what we're offering, is the opportunity for us to save $14,000 and really not give up anything. Same essential vehicle. It's just that we know that under the new contract they're going to be a little bit
new contracts more dollars than the existing contract.
But if we decide we want to take advantage of it, yeah, it's time sensitive, and that's the next item. If we decide we don't want to, that's fine. Either way, it doesn't. There's no urgency. There's no crisis here. No emergency.
Well, the urgency is if you want to save $14,000, you need to do it now.
That is time sensitive.
If you don't want to save $14,000, yeah, there's no rush.
It's going to be clear. It's not for lack of proper planning or anything that we, you know, it's just the opportunity. What we bring is the opportunity to save $14,000 by moving, approving this. And
so if we, we've already budgeted for this white fleet,
yes,
purchase, and so if we come in at $14,000 less than the budgeted item, where does the difference go?
Fleet replacement fund.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
It's
there.
Yeah.
All right.
That's for your car.
Yeah. Right.
And I see the letter, but for the public, we gave the opportunity to the local Ford dealership to,
yes,
to bid, and they declined.
As they seem to
as
do,
they do
routinely.
Right. And I think that's more of their business model.
Yes,
than not,
yeah, exactly.
They're not offended by it. It's just not what they do.
Right.
You know, for what it's worth, once upon a time I did some work for General Motors, and they have a regional sales manager, okay, so such that if I went to the local GM dealer and said, you know what, I need 100 pickup trucks for my fleet. And the local dealer said, well, hey, you need to talk to the regional guy to cut a deal for that. But apparently either that doesn't exist here or Ford doesn't do it. I don't know. But that used to be the case, that when people were talking fleet leases, fleet purchases or what, that there was a highly ranked sales executive of some kind that they were put in touch.
Bill, I think it does exist here in that the Sheriff's Association negotiated with that higher-ranked guy and got a contract price. We're just piggybacking on that price.
Right. Okay.
But it's the same concept, yeah. I'm sure the Sheriff's Department did not go to Palm Coast Ford and say, give me your best price.
Palm Coast Ford wouldn't talk to him.
Yeah. As somebody said, it's not their business model.
It's about availability, too. The folks that have it, they have these vehicles right now. If you go to the local Ford, he doesn't have it. He's trying to find this one individual that you described. They're looking for him.
Yeah. Well, yep. If I'm the local Ford dealer, isn't it a feather in my cap to go to the local media and say, you know what, I brokered a deal between the city and Ford to put this fleet in, and golly, we saved him some money. That's just the way I think.
If this sounds like a good idea, saving $14,000, that will be the voting item in the special meeting immediately following this.
And staff has recommended this.
If staff didn't recommend saving $14,000, I'd recommend new staff.
Say thank you for trying to save us $15,000.
If I had my druthers, we'd take the $14,000 and plow it into the reserve fund. But we can't do that. So
normally I'm hesitant when the word no-brainer comes up, and I get a little worried. But in this case, this is truly a no-brainer. And
you can buy the trucks at this year's price, or you can buy them at next year's price.
Yeah.
Same truck?
Yeah.
Okay. Public participation, that's the last item on our agenda. Public participation, this is a workshop, so there is no public participation at this meeting. However, in 10 minutes or so, we'll be having a special meeting at which public participation is more than welcomed, or at our next regularly scheduled council meeting, which I think is October 6th, public participation on any item on this workshop agenda is fair game for the public. Discussion by city council of matters not on the agenda. Ms. Shipley. Mr. McGuire. Mr. Nobile.
Mr. Mayor, I have two items I'd like to discuss. Well, one is really just a statement. I had a meeting a couple of weeks ago with the chairperson of the Republican Executive Committee and the chairperson of the Democratic Executive Committee, and they brought their few R's, a few I's, a few D's, and we sat down together in the same room. They called on me. They proposed two questions to me. They asked why there was such strong opposition to a charter review, and then they asked me to bring up the creation of a charter review for vote because they wanted it to either get approved or not and be done with it, because what they're, you know, they're looking at is they believe they can get the vote, the signatures needed to get what they want changed on the ballot. But they don't want to. They want to have an open forum discussion on what gets in there, how it gets in there. They don't want to be the ones to formulate it. So also, I just want to read something to you from an article in the Palm Coast Observer from January 15th of this year. It was in the 15th anniversary edition. It was an interview with James Camfield, the ex-mayor, and he said, he says here, we're now in a period of city economic recovery, hopefully be a long-term period, growth and prosperity. If I were sitting on city planners, I would offer two recommendations. One, build the city economy by maintaining, increasing our retirement base. And two, establish a charter review commission. And then he goes on to say, our city charter was approved by the Florida legislature in 1999. It reads, the charter shall be reviewed no sooner than 10 years after the creation of the city, Palm Coast, December 31st, 1999. So it looks like he's saying two things in that article, in that statement right there. One is he believes that when the charter was created, the intent was that the charter would be reviewed after 10 years. And he thinks it's critical. You know, he believes it's critical. And this is one of the scribers, which I was asked to go and talk to. I didn't get to talk to him, but I did find that article. And I gave you that. I think I gave you the information if you want to go look at it. So basically, where I'm at right now is that, you know, I don't know what, I'm just offering you information. That's what I'm here. That's what I'm doing right now. I've gotten bipartisan support for a charter review. I've gotten, the original scribers to who are in belief that the charter should be, that this charter states it should, not should be, but it shall be, and they believe the intent was that it was to be done. So I wanted to give you this information, because there's a lot of information out there coming out in newspapers, articles, comments, and whatnot, that this somehow is my attempt to take over the city government. And trust me, if I were going to take over anything, it wouldn't be government. I mean, it's just not what my, you know. So I have no underlying agenda, except that from, you know, trying to serve the people and represent the people who come to me and ask me for this. So at our next business meeting, I'll make a motion to create this review. And then if somebody wants to second it and vote on it, and then at that point we can say, and if it passes, it passes. If it doesn't, then they know what their next step is to be. So, you know, anybody's got anything to say, I'm listening. Otherwise, I'll move on.
Without embarrassing anyone that participated in your meeting.
Yeah.
One of them spoke to me, so I'm not going to call them out by name.
Yeah,
okay, to not embarrass them. And I asked them point blank, have you read the charter? And they said no. I said, you realize the charter, other than the meets and bounds, is like 10 pages, right? And they said, no. Yeah. It covers the whole city. I said, no, it covers just how the government operates. So I still have not had, other than that one person who said, came to talk to me about it, I have not had one person ask me about charter review still, about changing the charter, other than you.
Well, because we're mixing terminology, okay? Mm-hmm. They are not coming to me and asking for a charter review. They're coming to me and asking me for changes to things that can only be changed in the charter. Mm-hmm. See what I'm saying? So if you want to change how city government functions, you know, what are the duties of the city council? That has to be done through the city charter. If you want to change I took notes of all the things they want to, mm-hmm. you know, they
I'm
suggest.
Now carrying my charter around with me.
I know, I'm having it. I have it pretty much memorized.
Yeah.
And it really is only 8 pages.
Okay, yeah. Exactly.
And I have the charter. That's what I did. I took the charter here and I deleted the boundaries.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not
I stapled
much.
Them.
But
so I stapled
reading
them
those
so
8
I could
pages,
pull them out.
Do you feel that everything in those 8 pages...
Well, let me give
be.
You some things.
Yes,
they, let me give
way.
You some things
the
they talked
it
about.
Be.
It's been suggested that a candidate must reside in a particular district, that he is that he also be voted in by that district and not at large.
That's
one
single
of
member single member district.
Okay, so that's one thing. So you see, they didn't come to me and say all these people and say I want a charter review. They said I want this. So Steve, being practical, said, well, all these things would require changes to the charter. So why not look at and do a charter review for this to see, you know, take it through a process that brings more of the public and more of the citizenry involved in, hey, do we want this? You see what I'm saying? Not, you know what I mean? So, okay, it's been brought up, but is it something that everybody wants? I don't want anything to, well, let me rephrase that. I have no desire that stuff come out of a charter review. Mm-hmm. I have a desire that we have the review, these things are discussed, and then when people come to me and ask for them over and over and over, nobody said, you know, I keep telling, I call them and say, you need to send me emails, because people check, but they don't. They call me, they stop in the shop, and these are the things. Another one is...
No, this is the second... This is just to interrupt. This is the second time that I said publicly, no one has ever contacted me about this, and I anticipated
and
that
gonna,
I would get be contacted.
And I'm going to tell
and
you why.
Nobody
tell
contacted
you why.
Me.
You want me? I'm going to tell you what they told me because I said the same thing.
Uh-huh.
Why are you getting in touch with me? Because we've spoken to the councils before and they did nothing.
It's not true.
Okay. Well, whether it's true or not,
has anyone?
There is, to the best of my recollection, in the 14 years that I have served this city and as elected official, one person has raised the issue of charter review, and that was to get rid of the mayor. That was the one and only time that anybody has ever raised the issue to me.
Well, I give you some other. It's been suggested that the qualifications need to change. I think that's about...
The amount of money or the number of
signatures. Yeah, that kind of stuff. This needs to change the primary resident. That was something else.
So we've got single member
and salaries.
Districts. We've got salaries. We've got qualifications.
Single member districts would cost more money on the ballot.
How much does it actually cost to do a review?
Depends how you do it. If you read, as I read the charter, and it's not crystal clear. There are three ways. City Council could put something on the ballot this coming November if we chose to. It's November of 16. Mm-hmm. We could say, okay, we want to go to single-member districts, write it up, put it on the ballot, and see if people vote. Option number one. That would cost us just the amount of money the supervisor of elections would charge us for that much more space on the ballot. Option number two. We can create a charter review committee of 5 citizens, one appointed by each of the 5 of us. That doesn't cost you anything, but you would almost certainly want to hire a facilitator for those meetings to help guide, structure, and if nothing else, if Mr. Nobile says, well, I think we should have such and such, the facilitator could then write it down in a fashion that would be acceptable for ballot. So you'd have the cost of the facilitator, city staff time, and then it says you will have 2 public meetings. So the cost there, it wouldn't cost you a huge amount of money, $20,000, $15,000, I don't know, I'm guessing. I'm thinking...
The last election to put a referendum on the ballot was $40,000.
I'm trying to, I'm using by comparison when the county did its charter study committee. Then the third option is, as Mr. Nobile indicated, the citizens get enough signatures on a petition, then it goes on the ballot as is. The problem that I have with this, way down deep, I say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Exactly.
I do not, I'm not aware of any significant problems. Another thing that I've heard is, why do we have four districts? We should have six districts, six council members and a mayor, have a seven-man board. You'd get better representation. It is my understanding that that was done in a city here relatively near us, and three of the six existing council members lost their seats because they got districted out. When you take four and draw seven,
you mean based on where they live?
Depending where you live, you may or may not, you may have to run for election all over again. Does seven people better represent the interests of this city than five? I don't see how. We have a diversity of opinion as it is. City salaries, charter, council salaries, that doesn't require a charter amendment to change it. City council can propose that at any time, and we did several years ago, a number of years ago. I understand Mr. Nobile saying I'd much rather have somebody else vote on my salary than me. Would that we were on the county commission whose salary is established by Tallahassee. They never vote on their salaries. I might even consider in my dying days on city council introducing a charter amendment to, or not an amendment, but a salary modification, cost of living increment each year. We're making, you people, we're all making the same amount of money that we made 8 years ago, however long ago it was that our salaries were changed. Cost of living.
And we make the same amount of money that the city council members in Bunnell make.
Yes. Actually, there was a time when the mayor of Bunnell made more than the mayor of Palm Coast, but that's neither here nor there. I came from a state where the school board was 100% voluntary. Our school board makes significant money. We could do that. The issue to me is not the cost of a charter review, but what is it that you want to change? I am very much opposed to single member districts.
Okay. See, that's
for
where,
example,
but that's where that's where I have some. Yes, you may oppose, and I may oppose of some things. Some you don't want to change, but isn't it up to the citizenry to decide how the government is governed? You know, that's what this document is. This document is how, you know, and let me tell you what my fears are. Okay, sitting down with these people, and thank God they were all amiable. There was no fighting the Democrats and the Republicans together. And they were very confident that the things they want changed, they can easily get. 5,600, I think they said, and I don't know if that's the number, but they confused it. What scares me is now they're going to write it up, and what they write up is going to get on the ballot. You know, and that, you know, I'd rather have, instead of a group writing something up, I'd rather have an open discussion on, first of all, is there enough support for that, salaries or districts, or, you know, single districts and that kind of stuff. You know, what are the pros, what are the cons so people understand it, especially not so much for whether it gets on the ballot or not. But there's discussion enough that they understand what it is if it gets on the ballot when it's time to vote on it. So, and I'm glad if this were to happen now, I'd rather it happen next year than an off year where voter turnout is low. So next year, I'm hoping, you know, with the presidential
election. Well, there wouldn't be an off year opportunity.
It has to be the year before an election.
No, the year. Well, we've got 6 months.
You start the process the year before, but to change the charter, it has to go to a ballot.
Right.
And the only ballot we have is an even numbered year, so you wouldn't be able to do it in an odd year.
Well,
the vote would not be in an odd year.
Well,
the,
I mean
the
process, a non-presidential is
yes.
What I mean. An off
yes.
year
okay.
is that
okay.
a...
Right. Right.
That's what I'm talking about.
Gotcha.
I'm sorry.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so this election is going to be a good turnout. It seems like in yeah, well, okay, yes.
First time for everything.
Technically, you know, they're better than non-presidential election years. So. But that's all. Like I said, I just want to bring it to a finale,
yes.
and then bring it to them and say, look, if you want it, this is if it doesn't pass, If you want it, this is what you have to do. If it does pass, then we're going to do it. Now you get your stuff together and do it. Bring it to the people, bring it to the commission or the committee.
You said you had two items.
Oh, yes. Wait, last comment. The charter, for me, and I know I've kind of opposed it from the beginning, but I mean, I've read it several times. I really don't think there's too much that needs to be changed.
Well, we differ greatly.
Salaries, maybe, but yeah. I'm not even convinced that needs to change. There's something about serving.
Yes, there is. And here's the thing is, one of the suggestions, which I got beat up on very bad, and it was all misinformation and I'll say lies, was there is a large group, bipartisan, no conspiracy theory, no conspiracy or anything like that, that wants to change the duties of the city council and get them more involved in the day-to-day, okay? Whether that, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But if that does, then in conjunction with that...
You need a living wage.
Exactly. That's what we're talking about.
And then you would need to elect people who had the expertise to carry out their function.
No. See, you're missing what they're saying. See, this is where it went off, okay? Nobody gets... This is what I've been told, okay? And I looked through this plan, and it's a very common management practice. But what they're talking about is this. We have a city manager, not changing the structure. Nobody's talking about changing, the council manager structure or, you know, that. That's fine. There's the manager. And then there are the directors of the various, like we have today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But each... council member will be responsible to the people for these certain divisions.
How do you?
I don't want
responsibility. So we make Mr. Nobile liaison to the building department,
right?
For example.
Okay.
What do you do that differs from what you do now?
You know, it makes me responsible to the people for what's going on there. It puts me in the day-to-day of what's going on there. So I can see. People feel, let me just tell you what people feel, and I'm not talking about a dozen. I'm talking about thousands and thousands of people in this town believe the town is run by the city manager. That the focus of the town and the direction of the town is directed by the city manager. He does what he's want, what, and I'm not talking about Mr. Landon. Mr. Landon does a great job. I have all full confidence in what he does, but they believe he directs the town, not the council. The council is the way I've heard it been put. The council approves what the manager brings to them.
The manager puts together the programs that we set policy for.
Yes, but we're not part of that.
We strategic action plan every year.
That's a strategic option, and this is not policy, and it's not a strategic action. It's like we want to do better in that. See, we want to grow our economy, and then, okay, go. That doesn't put me involved with what the city manager is directing that director to do.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Where
okay, I want to interrupt you.
Yeah.
That sounds like it could work, right? Except for you're saying that someone is going to leave their profession, okay? Risk being elected to the city council. Take the risk of being elected to the city council so they can have a full-time position as the whatever.
Isn't that what they do at the county?
No.
They
all have jobs.
They are defined.
No, they do
they
not
are
all have jobs.
They are defined by state constitution as
but
full-time
for their
employees.
Yeah, yeah.
But the reality is,
they can have
none
jobs.
Of them puts 40 hours in.
Well,
some of them do have
George
jobs.
Hans retired, but he used to work.
You know
and, well, anyway, but wait, let me finish.
Yes,
finish.
I'm sorry.
Okay, so I've done this. I'm committed to the city. I'm going to leave my job.
Okay,
my profession. I'm going to take up this role, risk it. I win. Great. Okay, I now have this role. In 4 years, I lose. Now what? I'm somehow I'm going to enter the workforce again and pick up my profession again, no, perhaps?
The reality is that under this circumstance, you won't leave your profession. We will restrict applicants for city council to those who can afford it.
Well, that's what I was going to get to, you're losing the opportunity for diversity because you would have primarily retirees.
I think you're 100% wrong. If we're giving them more responsibility and we're giving them a living salary, that broadens.
How can you be involved in the day-to-day operations if you're going to work every day?
You're not. If you have a living salary, then you don't need to. Or you can do something part-time.
Now,
what is a living salary?
Until you lose your election, then you're out on the street.
But wait a minute. That's how it works.
Yes, that's exactly how it works.
And that's why you have the very wealthy in Congress.
But
you're arguing to me about you're basically telling me we're useless.
No.
Yes, because
absolutely not. If you define yourself that way,
and the other thing you're telling me is, unless I'm retired, I can put the time in that's necessary. See, I don't let the people deal with this.
I think you're right.
Because here's the thing. I mean, we can argue all day long, and I don't want to over implement my opinion. You know what I'm saying? Because people might just say, "No, we don't want." And then that's fine. Then no, we don't want that. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So I don't want to get into what I think. You know what I mean? I do want to hear what you think. But I don't want to get into a thing with it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But that's how the different sectors feel.
Yes.
Is that city council does too much or city council does too little? You know what I'm saying? So it's going to boil down to who thinks. Who has more people that think their way?
I just want to interject one thing because I haven't said anything. But you, as a city council person, you can get involved in the day-to-day affairs of the city to whatever degree you choose.
No, that's not true. The charter says I'm not to interfere.
I come up here every day.
You come up here every day.
And talk to the staff members to find out what's going on. And find out what direction they're moving in. If I don't agree with
then you know
then
what?
I sit down with the
you can do
manager.
That because you're retired. I can't
retired.
Do that. Well, you have the time somehow.
I make the time, but I own a business.
How do you make the time? If I own a business, I don't have time to come up here every day.
Your business is different.
So if the charter changes, you're going to close your store?
I wouldn't run.
And that goes to the diversity. It's the opposite of what you just said.
No, because people like me are the only people who can run now. Because I have the ability to come here on three Tuesdays a month in the morning, mm-hmm. and one Tuesday at night. Everybody I know couldn't do that. They just couldn't. They couldn't take off every Tuesday to come to a council meeting. They just couldn't do that. So they can't run. I mean, they just can't.
What would you consider a living wage?
Well, I would not consider a living wage. What the suggestion has been is a comparison to the county and then a CPI.
So, all right.
75% of what the county
80% because we're 80%.
80%, yeah, okay. Whatever.
Right,
yeah.
So 80% of the county.
Whatever the counties make, you know, salaries are, that they can afford the time to do all of that. But that's, again, it could be less, it could be more. I don't think people should get rich in government. Or, you know what I'm saying? Because there is that component of service, mm-hmm. you know? So.
How do we account for the Clintons?
How
do we account for the Clintons?
That's Arkansas. This is Florida.
Okay. Bill, I'm just going to share one thing with you. And I understand what you're getting at. When I was first elected to the city government in New Jersey, we had kind of a mixture. It was a council manager form of government, but council there had specific assignments. Now, at the time, I think I was still in the classroom as a teacher. I don't think I moved into administration. I was assigned to public safety, so I was the fire commissioner and police commissioner, And I was also assigned as the finance chairman. Sitting next to me was a holdover from a previous election. He was a CPA. He was assigned the liaison to the public library. Just because you get an assignment does not mean you're qualified to do that. It becomes very political then. Anyway,
yeah.
But you're right.
I agree.
Make the motion.
I agree with the pros and cons of because there's always pros and cons to everything. I like the city manager, the council manager form of government. I don't like, personally, okay, I'm speaking personally, not for the people. I don't like personally that the manager is in more control than I can get involved, even if I had the time to come in here. I simply am not going to direct any, nor am I going to get involved in, you know, I can ask questions, you know, but I could do that here. You know, the city manager comes, I could ask him all the questions and get all the information I need. I don't need to go. But technically, based on the charter, that's all I can do. I can only go in and talk to employees, ask them information, you know, that
so
kind
you
of
would
stuff.
Like to be able to
I
give
would not
direction.
Like to, I would like to be part of their day-to-day so that when the city manager says, you know, I'm trying to think of an example and I can't, it's just... When we get us when something is going to be done and we get a recommendation from you know the staff has worked on it for months and okay here's the recommendation. I always feel like we're not getting everything that we could have. I feel like we're getting what is directed to the staff. This is what we're looking. Not, and I'm not throwing that in malfeasance. I'm not saying you were doing anything wrong.
Right.
I'm just saying we're only getting one thought of that. So if I'm in there, I would like to be able to say, hey, wait a minute. What about, you know, what if we, you know, before the staff, because here's what I feel terrible about. You know, what is the staff's going to work on it for 6 months? Then it comes here, and here's your two choices. What am I going to say? No, go back to the, I'd rather be ahead of that. And say, wait a minute, there's three choices, or there's four choices. Let's look at this, let's look at this. And that can't be done, first of all, that can't be done by one person everywhere. You know what I'm saying? Go ahead.
At the end of all of our agendas is this worksheet of what's coming up.
Yes.
If there's something that you see there, you don't go meet with the director and go talk to him about it?
I meet with Jim every day.
No, with the director. So, like, if you see what... Like,
if I have questions.
Up.
Well, if I don't understand it. Hmm.
But that's where you can give input.
Well, I understand that. But
I think if we and I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm just saying because of the topic right now, I know I've gone to the city manager. I have my charter, but if I go to the city manager and I say, I really don't like the way this has been handled. This is wrong the way it's being handled, and I'd like to talk to you about it. I have been told you need to stay out of it. Okay, so then maybe what I'm supposed to do here is just this. You know, sometimes I feel
you're
like
talking,
that's what
I'm going to assume a little that it's a personnel, this has to do with personnel.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, you couldn't have the five of us intervening in personnel. You'd undermine the management.
Well, not only that.
No,
personnel
no,
matter. I say hire him. She says don't hire him.
No,
that wasn't the case, and it
wasn't the only case. But if the one that I think you're talking about,
I don't know a specific thing. I'm trying to think of what scenario that applies to.
I just want to at least be heard, at least be able to say to the city manager, "Can you look at the way I'm looking at it?" You know, instead of just you know, now that person might be fired for going to you. I have a problem with that. You know, and I think that is my only, if I look through the charter, do I have four or five things that I put question marks next to and said, I could see somebody reviewing this. I'm not sure I could see somebody reviewing it if they haven't sat in this job. How you how you run or how you see your city council job going might be different than me and Steve, as we're new. But I know since I said okay with Steve on the charter review, I have had a little bit of a cold shoulder and people acting a little different because you want to side with him, huh? Okay. That makes me a little nervous.
Not every decision we make is going to be popular.
And this is, you see, the other thing you go back to, which I again allude to, is this is part of why I was elected. Because this is what these people, when I would go and talk to people and they would, I mean, this is what they wanted. They wanted a change. So I'm offering,
okay.
Not giving it to them. You know what I'm saying? I can't give it to them, but right. I can offer it.
Since no one has ever talked to me about it,
then
I have to put some weight
sure.
that it's the circle of people that you see.
I don't hang with the Democrats. I don't hang with the Democrats, and I got not for any reason. I don't, you know, they don't.
I didn't mean it like that. I meant citizens, businesses. I meant just
yeah,
people.
But still, I don't. These people
folks.
Who came to me, I never spoke to. I had a guy call me on the phone. After the last meeting, the last business meeting, I never spoke to before in my life, and he's the one who arranged this meeting with, and his mind was identical to mine, and to the other people who I do know. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm saying this was not, I'm trying to get outside of that, and that's where, but you know, you also have the mayor. The ex-mayor, mm-hmm. Pomko, saying that we need to, you know.
We don't even know that he said that.
It's printed. Wait a minute.
It must be true. I saw it on the internet. It must be true.
Okay. You know, that's terrible.
It is.
So then you should call the Palm Coast Observer and tell them they're liars.
Nope.
This was a quote that it's in the paper, and I told you where. January 15, 2015, in a special edition, they did an interview with Mr. Mayor and with the ex-mayor. And that's what he said. You know, he was said there are two things. And one, and I agree with both of them, is one is we need to continue to maintain our retiree population to help stabilize our community and our economy. And two, we need to do a charter review. So of all the things he could have said,
okay. That's
one of the things
he
said.
Could we possibly just take this as we do everything else when, you know, Ralph Carter Park, they had an issue, people came forward, and just, you know, make a notice out there. Listen, if you feel that you want the charter review, come on
that's
in.
That's what this
and,
is.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
This is,
but I mean,
and they need to listen to
no
it.
One
it's
shows
their responsibility.
Up, then you
but,
know.
But it's not. I was elected to represent them. They don't need to come here and sit here because they said, Steve, you go there and we're going to, you know, this is what we want.
Absolutely
bring
right.
This up.
And that's why there are five of us.
Exactly. And that's why
and I feel I represent the same people.
Okay,
you
well, right. And well, that's why I say next week we'll
make a motion.
Bring it up. If it goes nowhere, it goes nowhere, and then we can move, and then we don't have to talk about it anymore.
Very good.
Well, until they do something. Yeah.
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah. Discussion by City Council matters not on the agenda, Mr. Lorenzo.
I have one more thing.
Oh,
I apologize. You know what? I'm going to default. I'll go free. It's not.
You're going to get a second bite out of the apple at our special meeting.
No, that's all right. I'll bring it up at the following, the next workshop.
Mr. DiLorenzo.
I have nothing.
Discussion by city attorney of matters not on the agenda.
Nothing.
Okay. At this time, Mr. Vice, I have nothing. I'll bring it up in the other meeting. We've got another meeting coming up very shortly.
Oh, boy.
This time, Mr. Vice Mayor, motion to adjourn this meeting.
Motion to adjourn the meeting and have a short recess.
About a 5-minute recess, and then we'll reconvene for the City Council business meeting. We are adjourned.
Huh?
Don't go.